AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. If everyone would like to join me in the set-aside prayer on page 46, paragraph 1, to a God of your own understanding, please set aside everything we think we know about ourselves, about our illness, about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that we may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help us see the truth. Tonight, we are on tradition 6, and we will be reading first from the long form. Buckle up. Tradition 6, long form. Problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group as such should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. Will an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. Now, I'd like to welcome our first speaker, who is Rob H., who will be sharing for 20 minutes. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you, Laura. Hi, everyone. My name is Rob, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, thank you to the Committee of Area E to ask me to, Jenny actually, that asked me to actually give this talk, and it's a good opportunity for me. It's been a good few years since I've given a talk on a tradition. However, my home group once every cycle, as we go through the steps, does a tradition every week. So they are vital, they are important, and I am delighted that I get a chance to participate in a forum tonight that is highlighting the traditions. So obviously in doing this, what we want to focus on is the subject and the traditions, but just to put it, you know, myself in a little bit of context as to who I am and you know, just as I talk about the traditions, to just give you an idea of myself and my experience. My sobriety date is the 20th of June, 2001. And immediately as I talk now, the value of the traditions will start to come in. That my sobriety date was the day of my first meeting. And because of what happened in that meeting and what happened to me in that meeting, and really, if I dig deeper, the way that meeting was run, you know, I haven't had to pick up a drink since. So, I've had continuous sobriety since that first meeting. And what I mean by the importance of what happened in that meeting is when I walked in, I was 3 days away from the booze, shivering, shaking, a mental and physical mess. But I walked into this room, and this is where, you know, for me, we're not scientists and there's no definite, so it's hard to describe, but in my experience, I walked into this room on a lunchtime, it was a lunchtime meeting, and there was a presence, there was a feeling, I call it the magic, but there was an atmosphere in that room that immediately took hold of me. And what happened in that hour that I was in that room, you know, I walked in there a drunk and I walked out of there without picking up a drink. When I walked in there, there was someone at the door to welcome me. There was a table at the top. There was tea, there was coffee, there was literature. That's not the traditions, but having got to know that, and that didn't become a home group. But knowing that group as well as I did, I used to go there regularly at lunchtimes. In later months, as I got to know AA, what I did know about that group, it still goes today, by the way, it is a well-run group with a steering committee, and the group is run on the basis of observing the AA traditions as they're laid out right from 1946 when they started. And the connection there, the importance for me is because that group was living the traditions, was practicing the traditions, the message was carried to me. And this is the value of the traditions. It keeps AA together, it keeps the group together. And look, you know, not everyone stays sober on the first meeting. It's irrelevant whether you do or you don't. But what is relevant is that AA groups survive and prosper when they follow the traditions. As I progressed, that was my first meeting. I progressed quickly. I joined a group and I went through the steps. And what happened is I was halfway through the steps. And I was just, my home group at the time was just a topic meeting or speaker. Very well run, but that's what it was. Halfway through the steps, I did step 5 and a transformation happened. Something fundamental happened to me spiritually. I went through a change and it was a spiritual change. And what happened was a deep sense of gratitude I began to feel about what had happened to me. And where had we come from? This group that had become a member of, this society that had finally turned the key to stop drinking, what was it? Where was it? And how did it work? And, you know, the sponsor I had and the sponsor I had for a number of years encouraged me to delve back through the AA literature into the history of AA. And at that point, and to be fair, not beforehand, the traditions weren't mentioned to me and it wasn't, you know, suggested I go to steps and tradition meetings up at that time. It was just me and my sponsor going through the steps. But after step 5, I was very much encouraged by my sponsor at the time to go to a steps and traditions meeting, which I did, and also go back through the AA literature, AA Comes of Age, Pass It On, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, those fundamental books that recount the history of AA. And it was at this point that the traditions really I began to understand the importance and also each tradition, how it played a part in the survival of AA. So that's how the traditions kind of came to me. I'll just speak about it before I go into actual tradition itself as well, just my experience of the, and I touched on it before because it's not tangible, but you know, today, whatever year of sobriety I've been at, I can still walk into an AA room and immediately, or an AA meeting, and immediately get a sense of all meetings are good. I don't say that lightly. All meetings are good. But I definitely get in the sense when I walk into an AA room where the committee, the members are trying to run that meeting as best they can through the traditions. And I can't prove this. I can't even articulate it that well, but I just know it and I feel it and have done for years. When those groups are being run with the traditions as the central point, the AA magic's there. And I can't quantify that any better than just stating it. That's my experience. And it really does, you know, what those traditions do is really just protect the spirituality of the groups. And in doing this tour, what's been really good, because I haven't picked up, you know, I've been reading Pass It On. It was just by coincidence. I was just delving back into AA literature because I hadn't picked it up for so many years and just going back. And within Pass It On is the first half of the book is it's almost like Bill W's autobiography, but then it goes into the history of AA. And there is a large section of that book, AA Pass It On, where it comes to 1946, the big book's out, AA in America and internationally is getting established. And Bill sets out then to, once the program is locked in, once the book's locked in with the steps within it, to set down on paper and to give guidance to the new society, which is still there, but how the group survived. And thank God that he did that, and that he really was. I mean, people talk about the Big Book being a work of divine nature, or is written by God, and that may well be the case. I mean, who knows? I'd certainly adhere to it myself, but this AA tradition, this for me is Bill W. And as you read, pass it on, it really was an extremely, just an extremely talented or bright individual, with failings, I'm sure. But, this was, just his experiences talking to each other, and there's no communication back then. It was letters. It was, I guess the early telephone was it. But what he set out to do, based on all the correspondence coming into the New York office that he was on, and he just constantly traveled. He just constantly out with his wife, attending all these groups and just talking to people. And then what you also learn in Pass It On, as in relevance to how these traditions came about, is his absolute, the close bond that remained between him and Dr. Bob, who was in the other side of the country. And everything that Bill did was run by Dr. Bob. And Bill seemed a very kind of flamboyant and extravagant thinker. And Dr. Bob over there at the other side of the country was very much more of a conservative, much more of a measured. And Bob was right in the groups as well. He was very much seen, especially in the West of America and Cleveland, the voice of the AA group. So all these traditions and all these ideas that came from from Bill was filtered through Bob. And it is fascinating to read. I'd urge anyone. I did read it in my first or second year, Pass It On, and then just haven't read it for 20 years. But, I'd urge anyone to pick it up and read it if you want to know more about the traditions, because it is all in that. So going to the traditions themselves, the key for these traditions is to protect the groups. And even more so than that is actually to protect the message. It is actually to prevent the dilution of the message for this tradition that I'm going to talk about in particular, is what Bill recognized was that some of the biggest potential threats to the AA message, to the AA groups, was those that was not so much inside the groups themselves, but those outside the groups. And this is where this tradition comes in, namely with property, prestige, and AA affiliations to anything outside of AA. And I will jump about slightly, because it is interesting for me. I've been in Sydney coming up 6 years. I had 5 years in Adelaide when I came over from London. I get moved around with work quite frequently. And after 5 years in Adelaide and Adelaide AA Fellowship, moved to Sydney. And I don't know the background of this at all, but what was really pertinent for me is when I came to Sydney 6 years ago, there was very much in meetings, and I sit in meetings, and not so much newcomers, but talked to long-term members. And there was when you got to know people a bit, there was very much this stirrings and discussions about an office in Croydon. And I'm not going to get into any of it here whatsoever. But I sensed straight away within certain groups, not all groups, but certain groups, like a bitterness, that there was certainly some infighting, I guess. I to this day, I don't know really what it's all about, other than there was a building, and a building was purchased. I believe it was in Croydon. I was just thinking about, to be fair, I haven't heard about it for the last 2 or 3 years, which is terrific. But in different groups that I attended at the time, there was much acrimony about this building. And this is precisely what this, and it didn't destroy AA in Sydney, and it didn't, but this is precisely what this tradition is about. How that building was, if it was owned or what, I'm not sure. So as I said, I don't want to talk about it in detail. But it's just a clear example there of why this tradition comes about. And it's as an AA group, we're not like, I run a business in my day job, and I have someone that looks after the facilities for me. I have, a team of guys that look after the buildings. I have an HR department that looks after people. I have, in commerce and structured business, we have these paid for professional departments that do their best to look after these ages. Us, by definition in AA, we're a completely voluntary society with most people not qualified at all to deal with property, to deal with You know, if we were going to get sponsored with hospitals or join detox programs to team up with, there's no one that gets paid for it. There's no one qualified. We are the least qualified people. And so even with the best intentions, and for me, 99.99% of what's done in AA is always with the best intention. And for me, this is the genius of Bill. He recognized that, and he's not guilty is a strong word, but he went down the path himself very strongly. Of you know, being asked to do talks, being given awards at universities, and even you know going to get some paid work for literature. All of this stuff that Bill went through himself, and you know, as a society, we're just not, you know, we just haven't got the expertise to do it. So again, Amanda, would you give me a shout when I'm up to about 20 minutes? Thank you very much. Sorry. And so for me, the genius of Bill W here and those that in those early days that advised him, was just immediately recognizing that we must be free from it all. You know, it firmly says that we are not to, AA groups aren't to own properties. We're not to be directly affiliated with hospitals, with rehabs. And if you're free of that, and it goes on in the other tradition with you know, with to be financially independent, the two are very linked, these conditions. And if you do that, and I think we do that largely, successfully, these problems can't come in. This isn't complicated stuff. I mean, the thinking behind it is very simple, but it's almost blindingly obvious, but very exceedingly hard to do, because we're human. We're in a way a constantly rotating fellowship. People come in, people go out for reasons other than drinking as well, geographical changes. So there's not much of a structure in a commercial sense there. So just don't have it. I mean, this tradition, just don't have it. Don't own properties. Now, I've been to a lot of meetings in the States, but never been a member of a group in the state. I know they have clubhouses. So I can't talk about there, and I believe they're incorporated separately, but I'm not in a position to talk about it. But certainly in the UK and Australia, which is my main AA experience, I've never, ever been a member of a group or known of a group that have owned a building. It's rent to church halls. It's rent to community centres. And at any time, should that group wish, they can give a week or a month's notice to do the right thing, and they go. And you know, it's vice versa. The owners of that building or the council or the church can do the same. And it's pure freedom in that way from a property sort of point of view. Treasurers can change every year; they should do, but treasurers can change every 3 or 4 weeks in time. So there is no being part of a treasury in an AA group is literally just, you know, it's just collecting money at the end of the meeting. It's not paying rent in a commercial sense. It's not negotiating leases or mortgages or commercial leases on buildings. We're free of it. We don't do it. And what it does is just protect us from ourselves. It protects us from greed. It protects us from all sort of things. And in protecting us, it protects the AA message and strengthens the groups. Going back in the early days as well, there was a lady, one of the first examples was a lady called Marty B, who I've been reading about over the last few days. And she was actually, if not the, one of the first female members of AA. She's a remarkable lady and just got it and was just very close to Bill and was just on fire. And she is actually asked by Yale University to form a kind of a board of trying to help out female alcoholics nationwide. But that did need funding, and Bill and Bob did get involved in that and put their letters to it, but then they went out funding and it all got a bit, and they had to quickly withdraw their affiliation to it and their backing of it. And they saw the dangers of it at the time. So again, what a love that these traditions are built on experience. No one was doing anything wrong. Everyone was just trying to do the right thing. But the dangers are there and it stopped. And if we go today, I guess this tradition for me is most pertinent in AA's interaction with AA, in my view, wonderful interaction with treatment centres, detox and hospitals. Sydney's fantastic, much better than, you know, London. Sydney, there just seems, particularly in the groups I'm in, there's so much interaction between the local detoxes and hospitals. But we're not we just interact with them, and individual members are free to go there. Groups can go there, but there's no direct affiliation. There's no one that's sitting on the Herbert Street board. There's no one that, you know, the new Sydney retreat that has just come up, which seems like a, you know, a fantastic place for a 12-step based rehab. But it's just individual members going there or giving talks or helping in the week. There's no affiliation to AA as a whole. And God forbid it doesn't. But if the AA retreat suddenly got in controversy or blew up or whatever it was, I'm there's no way it will, but if it did, members have gone, but AA as a whole cannot be dragged down in into that mire, and vice versa. I guess the AA, you know, it works both ways. The Sydney retreat wouldn't be dragged into any controversy in AA. There's a separation, and that separation is absolutely vital, but that separation doesn't stop the close interaction of AA members in the local community. We've just found this happy balance. Are there problems now and again? Of course there are. You know, it's a living, moving thing that and they're constantly challenged. But the reference point, and this is why I love, you know, the home group that I'm in, constantly in group consciences that I've been involved in, the three or four since I joined the group, whenever there's a pause, you can tell the group's not sure. You know, one of the older members just goes back to a tradition. It just refers it back to a tradition. It happened the other day. And it's just so refreshing to do. It just steers. There's no arguing. There's just no, this is what the tradition states. So I don't know. Am I around 20 minutes, Amanda, or 3 minutes left? Thank you. So that's largely, you know, that's largely my experience of the traditions. There seemed, you know, back when I came in, and I'm getting to a point in, because I'm getting older, both in AA years and both, you know, human years, nostalgia or whatever it may be. But it's a lot easier to look back because there's more to look back on. And certainly in London, there were so many steps and traditions meetings. I mean, it was, you know, you'd look down, we used to call it the where to find in London, and there was, you know, there was just step and tradition mean all the time. And you know, if you went to three meetings, one of them would be a step and tradition meeting. And you know, of course, once every 12 weeks it would be a tradition. Sadly, you know, it doesn't seem the case now, which is, I'm genuinely so happy to be, you know, part of this and, you know, part of my group, you know, my two groups, Kirribilli and you know, North Sydney at the Ron Dyer Centre, where, you know, we do set an allocated time aside in a cycle to go through each tradition. And you know, those meetings are really good. You know, newcomers there haven't got the experience, but, you know, there's a sense of learning. There's a sense of importance that we associate with it, you know, and long may it continue. But I'm just going to finish on just, you know, the book I've been, just if you're new, or if you just, you know, if you're not new and you know, you're looking for some literature and you're not sure, you know, you've read some of it, not that, read, pass it on. If you want to read about it, it's the absolute, it goes through the traditions with clarity and just gives an absolute background about where these things come from. So with that, I'll leave it there.
Thank you so much, Rob. That was fantastic for your share and your awesome service to us. Before I introduce our next speaker, I'll just really quickly read the short form of Tradition 6, which we're talking about both the short and long tonight, which is: an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And if you could all join me in welcoming my friend Sean to share with us for another 20 minutes on this tradition. Thanks so much, Sean.
Thanks, Laura. Thank you. My name's Sean. I'm alcoholic. Hi, everyone. Great to see you. Thank you so much, Area E, for inviting me to speak tonight. Any opportunity to pass the message of AA on is really doing me a favor. I remember chatting with my sponsor, and I'd be on my phone in early recovery, and I'd be talking to my sponsor, and he would give me all this time, and and I remember him saying to me, he says, you know, you're probably helping me more than I'm helping you. And I always kind of wondered how that worked. And you know, now at the other end of the steps and now the other end of the traditions too, I can really see that there is such great about this amazing possibility of finding so much joy and serenity and peace in the act of forgetting yourself and thinking of others. And so I'm really grateful to be here, because it's just another chance for me to share, you know, the thing that has saved my life. And it absolutely has. I Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And I know we've got a few newcomers in the room tonight, and welcome newcomers, old timers, whoever you are. Thank you for joining us. I think the thing I'd say is that, you know, even though we're talking about traditions tonight, you know, this part of the traditions workshop in tradition six, the thing I'm going to share about is how it's helped me personally with my personal recovery, and how the traditions helped me to grow in myself and get better. Because being an alcoholic, you know, when I came into AA, I very quickly recognized that, you know, I couldn't drink like ordinary people. You know, alcohol was destroying my life. It, you know, very nearly, you know, took me out. And I'm lucky to be here. I'm lucky to be here in the shape that I am. And I think, you know, it is a miracle. I honestly do think it's a miracle in my life. And I've seen that miracle play out in so many other people's lives, that they've, you know, been restored to sanity. And that's very, very much my story. Like, I was an insane, dangerously antisocial individual when drinking. And I got myself into a lot of trouble, and I've been restored to sanity around alcohol. And my whole life has drastically changed. I know there's members on this call tonight that talk about, you know, it's not like shining up your old life. It's like a completely brand new experience. And, you know, I couldn't see that when I was unwell and before I started taking the work in alcoholics, started doing the work in AA. I thought living a life sober would be very difficult, very painful and bleak and miserable. But what I've really been given is a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, they talk about in the big book of being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I know that's true today, and I'm extremely grateful. I've spent the last almost 15 years of my life in AA, and, you know, I'm very grateful that I found myself inside the heart of a very structured group. I had a sponsor from probably about 4 months sober. I worked through the steps, and I recovered from alcoholism through working with my sponsor through the steps. The thing about my group is that, you know, my sponsor would drag me along to area meetings, even when I was in early sobriety. You know, that, you know, we turn up to area meetings, and I'm pretty sure I could happy to say that, you know, 50% of the attendance at those area assemblies were members from my group. And so it was a really big, important part of my recovery to understand service as one of the legacies of AA. You know, there are three legacies: recovery, service, and unity. And so service work and understanding the traditions and how they held groups together and the intergroups and AA Australia and AA around the world together was a part of my experience. And so through the process, more or less, of osmosis, I was, you know, indoctrinated in a positive way into both the steps and the traditions. And I don't know if I consciously recognized that getting involved in service at such a, you know, such an early point in my life, you know, doing in AA, you know, doing jobs at in the group, like washing the dishes or chairing a meeting or being the GSR, like Bob talked about, the group service representative, working at the central service office, licking letters, and, you know, being area, I got to be the area chair for a couple of years and doing a whole bunch of stuff. I didn't realize at the time that it was also helping my own personal recovery. Like, I get to grow not only through the steps, but through the traditions. And it was never a conscious thing until just recently. Last year, we invited an American speaker to our group to a workshop we had on the traditions. And the speaker's name's Bob D. He's from Las Vegas. And funnily enough, I just found out the other day that he's my sponsor. Anyway, I didn't know that at the time, but Anyway, so Bob D came and talked about the 12 traditions, and he talked about them for an hour. And it's a fascinating talk. And I went back and listened to the audio recording that one of the group members passed on to me. And it really stood out to me that he said something, and I'm gonna just paraphrase more or less what he actually said. But he said that he talked about that when he got sober, that he had a lot of things in his life that still weren't working, you know. And I identified with that. Like, I got sober, and there were still things in my life that weren't working. Like, my relationships still needed to improve. My ego was still, you know, really strong at work, and I had a big thirst to kind of get my life back. You know, I got sober, but I was a young guy, and I wanted to get my life, you know, back on track, make money, become successful, do all this, you know, stuff, you know, kind of be a big shot in my own life. And, you know, I chased that, and Bob D talked about that very thing. You know, he was having troubles in other aspects of his life. Yeah, he was sober, but there were other things that weren't working. And it's funny because he went and talked to a couple of guys about it, a guy called Chuck Chamberlain. And Chuck Chamberlain suggested that he go and look deeper into the traditions. And he started to look into the traditions, not only from a point of view of how it holds groups together and the structure of AA, which it absolutely does. And that's what it's for, you know, which Rob really, you know, cleverly, you know, articulated in his share of how it works to keep the rooms of AA open for the alcoholics that haven't even been born yet. Yes, it does that. But he also said that the traditions are a personal pathway from the sense of being of disunity, of being separated from the rest of creation, rest of humanity, to a place of self-forgetting, of letting go of your own self and finding a unity and harmony with the rest of the world. And I was like, whoa, that's amazing. That's an amazing idea. And I started looking into it a little bit when it came to Tradition 6. And I went, you know what? There's something really powerful in Tradition 6. And it's a little more clear. It's a little bit more clear in the long form of the traditions. And the long form, they had to abbreviate the long form into the short form for them to get past. But the long form of Tradition 6 starts off as being read before. I'm just going to read the first sentence. It says, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Now, you could apply that to the group, but you can also apply that to yourself. So when I got sober, I thought I was going to get all this stuff back, you know, all the things I wanted to get back. And I was going to be a big shot, and everyone was going to take notice because, you know what, I'm 28 years old, I'm sober, you know, nothing can stop me now. I've solved this problem. I'm going to get everything that I thought I was going to have. And what I didn't realize at the time was I was still really, you know, still pretty bent out of shape. The process of, like, of being alcoholic, it can be, you know, quite destructive, you know, like it really twists and warps your perception of what's real and what's not real. Even to this day, you know, my perception can be twisted so out of shape that I can't see what's real. And I need AA to help point me back in the right direction. Here's a little example of it. I sent my CV to someone I'm working with at the moment. And I sent my CV across because they wanted to talk to someone, you know, recommend me for an opportunity. And as I was sending my CV, I felt like, geez, it's just not enough on there. You know, like, this is really like a weak, meager, there's not enough credits on there. Or maybe I should have more stuff. I should talk up this and that. And the response that I got back from the other person was like, wow, this is so impressive. And it was like, it was almost like chalk and cheese. Like, my mind wants to convince me that everything is crap and that the only thing that's going to make it better again eventually is a drink. This is the insanity. We are insane alcoholics. It's so crazy. But even without, like, even like the obsession to drink has been removed, I'm still left with this misshapen ego, this part inside of myself, this hole in my soul that I'm left with. And, you know, I think in that first line of the traditions, it's saying, you know, money, property, and authority. You know, if we start chasing those things, if I start chasing those things, I know I'm going to head down the wrong path. And so, you know, what the traditions are suggesting is to move away from that and to do the work that's in front of us, which is to help others. And that's been a hard, hard lesson for me to learn. I don't talk about this very much, but, you know, I guess this is my own personal experience of like letting money and prestige. Prestige is the thing I chased. When I first got sober, I got sober because I lost everything that I thought I wanted because I drank too much. And the things I thought I wanted was chasing fame and fortune. I used to play music in another country a long time ago, about 20 years ago. And we got a lot of good stuff thrown at us all at once, like a lot of cool stuff, like, you know, record deals and pretty women and big concerts and thousands of screaming fans and bodyguards and fast cars and money and all this stuff. And I was like, yes, this is it. I'll tell you this one thing. When I wrote a song on Coogee Beach, and a couple of years later, I was sitting in front of 30-piece string orchestra and two French horns. It was the Prague Philharmonic. You know, it's one of the, you know, most beautiful bands in the world, like classical bands in the world, and they're recording my song. And when I walked into the room, all the string players, as a sign of respect to the composer, they take their bows and they tap their bows on the music stand, and it makes this sound. You're like, whoa. And my head was just blowing off. Like, my ego was just like, boom, I made it, baby. I've made it. Yeah. And, like, you know, I was so like out of control with like this feeling and this emotion. I had to go blow a joint with my girlfriend in the photocopy room just to be like, oh my God, this is so crazy. You know, what's going on? And like the very next day, because the things beyond my control, it all fell apart. And I was left with just nothing. You know, I was just left holding this baby. And like all the things that I thought I wanted, you know, were taken away from me. And so I drank and 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 I drank until I broke. And then when I got AA and I got better, I wanted all that stuff that I'd lost back. And so my first couple of years in AA, I started a band. I borrowed money when I only had like a small, you know, like a 9-month-old baby. I borrowed $25,000 from the bank so that I could finance my new career as a musician. And it just was built on sand. And it was built on the sand of my own ego. And I chased it and I chased it and I chased it. And I chased it until I went slowly insane in recovery. And the only reason I reckon I got through is because I had enough structure of a group around me, a sponsor around me, and the traditions that were holding that group together to keep me close and into the center of AA when I needed it the most. At the end of my $25,000 band experiment, which I took out with a partner, a business partner that left me holding the baby to pay it all back. At the moment that business partner left, I had three sponsees under step five calling me every single day in a service position at area. So there was no way that I could get away from AA. It got me through. The day that the guy left, I was organizing the Eastern Regional Forum for Area E. So I just had to turn up and be of service so I could go through those emotions of losing everything. I was lucky. Like, I was just lucky because I just happened to be in the right place in the right time. AA held me when I needed it the most. And I only know now through like the process of trial and error and through coincidence and the lucky fortune of, you know, listening to this talk from Bob D last year, that I have been restored to sanity and kept safe, not only through the process of going through the steps, but through the process of continually being of service, continually being of service to AA and to others. And Bob D, you know, he also talked about this idea that money, property, prestige, authority, all this stuff has to become second. You know, he was saying this. He said, my job now is to go and help God's kids and to have faith that if I just do God's work well, everything is going to be all right. Everything's supposed to be the way that it is. And that's, you know, that's been my experience. Every time I do this AA stuff, like just things just go good. My life is like really beautiful and really amazing. And it's as a result, a direct result of doing this work. And I know I've only got a couple more minutes, but I just want to share a couple of things because, you know, this experience of Alcoholics Anonymous, people in AA members of getting sober through the 12 steps, but then slowly going a bit curdled. You know, this happens quite a bit, you know, like, and Bill, it happened to Bill Wilson as well. And Bill, he shared about this. He says he shared this in 1958 in a letter written to the Grapevine. And he said, why can't the 12 steps work to release my depression or his problems? By the hour, I stared at the St. Francis prayer. It's better to comfort than to be comforted. Here was the formula, all right, but why didn't it work? And he said, suddenly I realized what the matter was. My basic flaw had always been dependence, almost absolute dependence on people or circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionistic dreams and specifications, I had fought for them. And when defeat came, so did my depression. There wasn't a chance of making the outgoing love of St. Francis a workable and joyous way of life until these fatal and almost absolute dependencies were cut away. And look, that's as true as I think it needs to be for me. Like I need to self-forget. I've got to stop chasing all the me personally. In tradition 6, it says, you know, issues of property, prestige, money, security, authority, all of these things. I can't chase them. I've got to put my work of AA first and everything and trust in God that everything will be okay. And I will finish with this and I'll say that it's hardwired into the big book in the chapter How It Works. And, you know, an old timer in our area, Judge Jimmy, used to say this, and he said this is a very important part of the big book. And he says, first we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And next we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal and we are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was a keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. I've read that part of the book so many times, but it's true. Like when I first came into AA, I thought the beginning of my journey was going to be a bleak, miserable, dry road. But I'm happy to say that, you know, it is an absolutely beautiful, amazing experience that you won't want to miss. So look, I'm so grateful to have, you know, share, and that's my time. Thank you.
That was wonderful. Thank you both so much for your service. Rob, would you like to take us out with serenity prayer, please?
God,
done.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, everyone. Fantastic.